ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Australia are obviously the favourites going into the series, but there's a quiet confidence within our group that we can do well here.
That's Mark Wood, English fast bowler. Quiet confidence. It's been the vibe out of the English camp for a while. It's a little unsettling. More from him in a moment. We also have Phoebe Litchfield, who's fresh off a bumper World Cup. Yes, Australia lost, but she shone. Emma Lawrence is here wrapping the Kangaroos Ashes tour of England. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Okay, we want to start quickly with Mark Wood, the English fast bowler. He's charismatic. He's frequently injured. He is really, really, really fast, and he's in Perth. If you're a cricket fan, you've probably had a conversation that goes something like this. Australia should win, right? What about Jofra Archer and Mark Wood? If they get going, look out. So I was interested to see what Wood might say when he spoke to press in Perth, and it didn't say much. Even when baited with a question around sledging, played a straight bat.
Yeah, I think that was obviously a little bit of needle in that game with things that had gone on, but going at this, I don't think there's anything being planned. I think that when it's almost forced, it's almost worse, isn't it? That it doesn't come across genuine or anything. And I'm sure that there'll always be that needle there, but we've got huge respect for Australia. I certainly have, and you know what they've achieved, and like I said, they're very hard to beat in their own conditions.
Dangerously friendly. I'm concerned. Phoebe Litchfield is gearing up for a massive WBBL season with the Sydney Thunder. She has just come off an exceptional World Cup where she was second for Australia in terms of most runs scored. Fifth for the tournament overall. Phoebe, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. WBBL in a moment. But first, I've got to unpack. You're 119 from 93 balls in the semi-final against India. Is that the best cricket you have ever played?
Oh, that's a big statement. Maybe. Yeah, I think, you know, if you told me I'd played that innings, I would have been very happy. And I think the way that was coming off of the bat and the whole spectacle of the semi-final and big crowd and all against India, it was pretty epic.
A semi-final knock of the highest class for this 22-year-old from Orange in New South Wales.
Yeah, like, what was that like? Must have been an element of surreal doing that in front of a massive, feverish Indian crowd in a semi-final of a World Cup.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Cricket over there is just unreal, and it's probably the times where I felt like a proper professional athlete. Yeah, it was amazing.
300 plus across the tournament at more than 50. From where I'm sitting, that seems as though you've gone to another level, if that's even possible. What clicked for you? What changed? It did seem to be on another plane.
Yeah, I don't know. I think really enjoyed my cricket over there. The playing surfaces are nice and conducive for batting, but I also think just the way I'm going about it, I've kind of taken a fearless approach and just seeing the ball and hitting it and hopefully picking the gap or clearing the field. And I guess any momentum I get, I just run with it and see how far I can go. But yeah, it was really enjoyable. And I think just contributing to that top order is something that I'm really proud of. And, you know, I look at the names around me and go, wow, like the fact that I'm up there rubbing shoulders with them and let alone scoring runs as well is really cool.
Fearless approach, hey? Like, is there something you do to try and make that switch in mindset? Was there a moment or a conversation that led to that?
I think my batting coach, Dan Marsh, just said, do your thing. And I think I've been, you know, playing some pretty attacking and innovative games in T20 and the 100.
Wow. Not only can she bat left-handed and hit sixes left-handed, this really is remarkable innings.
And I feel like I've just carried that momentum, and yeah, I feel like I'm batting my best when I'm just reacting to the ball and trying to move the game forward, because you naturally get into better positions anyway. So that's kind of been my game plan, and it's worked for now, but I know that it's not sustainable at times, and there will be a run of a few, you know, you hit some fielders and make a few errors, but I'll run with it for the meantime.
You mentioned before, like, the size and the scale and the scope of what you were just involved in. You obviously have some captaincy going on with the Thunder in the WBBL. How much of a leadership or tactical frame did you take on during those huge games? Were you sort of looking at ways in which games were being managed and taking a lot out of that from a leadership point of view?
Yeah, there was times where I'd, you know, take a breath and realise where we were and what we were doing and kind of go, okay, you know, if I was holding the reins right here, what would I do? And there's a lot of moments like that in 50 over cricket when the game's in the balance or turning away, and even just pick the brains of the leaders in our group. Most of them are skippering in the next month. So yeah, it's been really cool to learn off them and learn from my own experiences and see how other people go about it.
You guys were lights out until that semi-final defeat. Unbelievable performance to that point. Can you take us inside the rooms after the loss? I mean, Elisa Healy was telling us on this program before the tournament, this is definitely her final ODI Women's World Cup. Did it feel like a transition moment, a kind of end of a road for a version of this team?
I don't know. I think it doesn't feel that way. I also think because we have so much, you know, cricket to still play as a team. You know, we've got a massive multi-format series against India pretty soon, and so that kind of came to our minds pretty much after they scored the winning runs, because we were like, oh god, we want to get them back.
It must surely be the greatest run chase in the history of women's one-day internationals, given the context. Victory by 5 wickets to tears of joy.
Yeah, it was honestly utterly disappointing. And I think the way we were playing cricket, we really believed that we deserved a spot in that final, and the way we were playing cricket and the way we were going about it and the vibes in the team. So it was pretty heartbreaking. And yeah, it's sad because we would have loved to get her to lift the trophy one last time. And she deserved it as well. She played amazingly and got through that injury. So it was a bit heartbreaking, but you know, we've learned a lot from it and know that that's the game that we play, and it's down to a few moments, and we lost those moments. So, yeah, while it's disappointing, we also held our heads pretty high of the way we played throughout the tournament.
You hit on something that I'm interested in, the frustration of the defeat. The kind of takeaway from this tournament has been like, what a great moment for the women's game as a whole. You know, India's victory, watershed times for the sport. Does that sort of narrative kind of piss the team off a little bit, like that sort of takeaway?
It did when we just lost, but I think, you know, the optimists in us look outward, and I think you have to as a, you know, a women's cricketer. It's just insane the amount of scope the tournament got, the extra scope that, you know, the Indian girls wanted, and it just reached the whole nation, and it's just the most amazing thing for the Indian cricket team, but also women's cricket in the world, because we know how, you know, India are the superpower of cricket in the world. So yeah, it's pretty epic, but it's like, oh, we could have been there. And I think I put it down to, you know, the 90,000 at the MCG. It's kind of similar in that moment. And, you know, we were, I think the team was about 5 overs of not being in that final at the MCG. And you go, wow, if that didn't happen, I reckon we would have been pretty behind. So whilst we're sitting, you know, kind of sad, it's also a really cool moment for women's cricket.
WBBL season starts this weekend. You've played in the Women's Premier League in India. Which comp is the highest quality right now, do you think?
I still think the WBBL, for sure. I think our domestic talent is just unmatched in the world. And you see that with the likes of, you know, Georgia Vole, even myself, when I first came into the Aussie setup, the standard of domestic cricket then, you know, transferring into international cricket, it's not far off. And I think that's a testament to our domestic structure and the talent that we've got. And yeah, I reckon both tournaments are very good, but I think the standard of the WBBL is still the best in the world.
WBBL gets underway this weekend. You can catch all the action on ABC Listen app. We'll be live across the series. Phoebe, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Emma Lawrence is an NRL reporter with Channel 9. She's here to talk all things rugby league, starting with the Kangaroos' final Ashes clash in England, where they're going to try and sweep the series. Emma, this series was kind of framed as a reboot of a rivalry and kind of hoped to further revitalise the international game. Do you think it's hit the mark?
It's been great that, because this is the first Ashes series since 2003, so I think a lot of the players were excited to go over. I think it's going to take some time. I don't think yet it has all of a sudden made a dramatic difference. I know Phil Gould said in commentary for the test last week that England need to be coming over here more often for that rivalry to really become a thing again. They need to be coming over, even playing in the Pacific Champs. I know by definition they're not, you know, in the Pacific, but they need to be coming over. We can't be doing these once in a blue moon. And yeah, this one's the first time since 2003. So I think there's a lot of interest, certainly, but I don't think it's all of a sudden made a dramatic difference. I think it's progress, but we need to have England playing Australia far more often.
I feel like these kind of tours are always an opportunity for a player to stamp themselves as the biggest name in the game. Is Reece Walsh that person off what we've seen in two games?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think what he did during the final series during the grand final as well, getting the Clive Churchill medal was just absolutely insane.
Walsh receives from dummy half. Reece Walsh bounces off tacklers, bounces off the uprights, but bounces to Steenan to score a try for Brisbane.
He made his debut in the green and gold jersey, got man of the match on debut.
Shibasaki had Adokar on the left-hand side, but he had Reece Walsh on his right, and Reece Walsh is the man he chooses to go over and score his double on Test debut for Australia.
The second match also was great, both in attack and defence, and it's interesting to even hear someone like Nathan Cleary, who for quite a while now we've all regarded as the best player in the game, the way he speaks about Reece Walsh, almost fanboying over him and what he's able to do.
Yeah, just great, mate, honestly. It's been enjoyable to watch from afar, although sometimes he's carving me up, so it was nice to have him on my side today. And there's not many players in the history of our game that can just break a game open like he does, and he did it multiple times again today.
There are a lot of comparisons between Reece's grand final performance and then Nathan Cleary's in 2023. And Nathan, I know during this tour, said, mate, Reece has got me for sure. Like what he's done and witnessing what he's done on this tour, he now puts him on the pedestal as the best player in the game. So I think Reece has certainly stamped himself, but I'd still put Nathan Cleary still as the best player in the game right now.
20 passes infield and Cleary's there to finish it off.
Coach Kevvy Walters was only engaged for this tour, and with the World Cup coming up, do you think that he's done enough to hold on to that post?
Look, I think yes. I think the thing is too, I mean, I love Kevvy, but I don't know that it's not like there were a whole lot of other options there. So I think he hasn't done anything to lose that position, put it this way. So they've won the series. He's going for the whitewash, and I think that probably plays into the fact that he's gone with the same team. So he could have blooded the likes of Blake Brayley over there, who hasn't played in the green and gold jersey yet, Ethan Strange. You've got Mitch Moses and Dylan Edwards, but instead those players have gone over and aren't going to get a game. So he's determined to win this series. I know the senior players would have had a lot to say about that too. But yeah, I think there's no reason why Kevvy won't get the gig going forward. And given that Peter Volandis and the commission are not keen on having a club coach, then it's not like it leaves a whole heap of options. So I'd say it would probably be Kevvy going forward.
Elsewhere in international footy, PAC Champs final Sunday, the scenes in Western Sydney of Samoa fans, hard not to love. Will they be too strong with that support for New Zealand, do you reckon?
This is a really tough... I don't like to sit on the fence, but you know what? I think it would be an incredible storyline for Samoa to win. I just think what's happened is you've seen over the last few years, it all started back in 2018 when Andrew Fifita and Jason Taumalolo pledged their allegiance to Tonga. But before that, players would never walk away from the Tier 1 nation, so Australia and New Zealand. But now players are doing that. And Payne Haas was the big one for this tournament that did it for Samoa, and he's been incredible. But you look at their lineup with the likes of, you know, Jerome Luai, Bright To'o, all these stars of our game, even veterans like Junior Barlo being incredible. I think it's still going to be tough up against the Kiwis, but I just think the storyline and the growth of the Pacific, I'd love to see Samoa win, and the scenes in Western Sydney, you're right, have been incredible, but it's going to be a great day at CommBank Stadium.
Shapes as a cracker. Emma Lawrence from Channel 9, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
No worries. Enjoy the footy.
Time for soundbites. Have you heard of Sauce Gardner? Yes, that's an actual person, an NFL star, plays cornerback. He was traded from perennial strugglers, the Jets, to the Indianapolis Colts. Here was his reaction.
I was just like, please let it be like my ideal situation. Like, I want to win. Obviously, knowing a few guys on the team already, being closer to home, being closer to where I went to college, like, and my favorite color, blue. So, you know, it's truly a blessing to be here.
How did the Jets fans feel about that? Here's a father telling his child. A Jets fan, the news.
No, it's okay.
I don't get that. It's like I get a rivalry jersey.
It's okay. I'll get you a different one. He went to Indianapolis, and they also traded...
No, I don't like the Jets.
No, Quincy's still there.
The Jets are the worst. I'm taking all of that.
That's a motive. That kid probably feels a bit powerless right now, but he should know he does hold power. Ask Donovan Mitchell, the NBA star who was sledged playing 2K online by an adolescent who called him washed up. That got him fired up.
This kid pissed me off today. I was playing 2K. He just called me washed up. He called me a bunch of things. But I love it, you know what I mean? And I just told him, all right, we'll see. So this game was for that kid or grown man, whoever that was.
The Cleveland star had 46 points. Great story. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Phil Pryor. Thanks to TJ Villadio on Twitter, the ICC and Channel 9 for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.